important thing I always say to anybody is judge your garden what it looks like in winter, because that is when you can tell whether you have a good structured garden or you have no structure. The most important part of a garden is that you have your backdrop, which hopefully can be something that's evergreen, because whatever you have in the foreground needs that backdrop. It's like a stage.
Welcome to House Guest with me, Carol Annett, where I chat to people who shape the world around us through decoration and design. This week, we're venturing into the garden. I sit down with Randall Sidley, who founded RSL in 1978, a company that has since become globally recognised for beautiful, innovative designs. Randall has had a fascinating career, gaining extensive experience working alongside many eminent architects on private gardens, hotels, and commercial developments all over the world. I hope you enjoy the chat. Today, I'm sitting with Randall Sidley, the Lord Kenilworth, who combines a passion for landscape design and attention to detail, setting up Randall Sidley Limited in 1978, a company recognised all over the world for high-quality, innovative design, gardens and landscapes. Randall, thank you very, very much for allowing me to come and see you and sitting down with you. I've even brought my dog, actually my son's dog, who I hope is going to behave himself.
Diego.
Diego's joining us. Can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself? I mean, it's an extraordinary company that you have created, and it's been, I can't do the maths, how many years?
Well, it's 48 years.
48. I mean, that's, you know, to be at the top of the tree for 48 years is exceptional. Well,
I don't think I've been at the top of the tree for 48 years, but I've certainly been climbing that tree. But I mean, going back to when I started, I mean, my father was a very famous interior designer under the name of John Sidley, and I had always aspirations of going into his business. School and colleges and all that were not my most favourite places to be in. Like a lot of people that suffer badly from chronic dyslexia, people always sort of, they pretty well wrote me off at a very early age, albeit my parents hadn't, but the schools were not necessarily the kind of schools that honestly did anybody a favour, at least for me. So I was always sort of quite sort of, not quite recluse, but we had a house in the country, so I'd go pottering around in the garden because it was sort of my way of sort of being able to go and do something with my hands. But there wasn't really ever sort of a thought in my mind that I'd go into landscaping. I was always set on going into the interior designing world because I grew up with it and it was just always there in front of me. I woke up with it, so, you know, it was in my blood.
Did your father anticipate that you would follow his footsteps?
He might have thought about it, but he certainly didn't want, he didn't feel it was right. I mean, I look back on it all and I think, thank goodness I didn't, because he had a far too bigger footprint.
Yeah.
And I'd always, in many, many, many years, always been told by people, oh, your father was wonderful, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know, fine, yeah, but, you know, his son's not doing too badly after all. and it's sort of, I went into landscaping simply because I was working for him at the time. And it was a couple of projects that he was working on. And he was talking to somebody else about designing the gardens. And I said to him, okay, well, there's something I could probably do. And I thought, yeah, okay. And he sort of said, fine, if you're going to come up with, and I sort of like, I had a draftsperson to help do all the drawings and everything for him. But it was ultimately, you know, down to me and my ideas. So that then sort of took off because the client, who is still a client to this very day, sort of said, yeah, let's see how far you get. And from that point onwards, I mean, it was literally when I was 21, it took off. And, you know, amazingly, people sort of didn't quite see the potential out there because most people sort of brought their gardens up from the country. It was sort of very much sort of like, oh, yeah, a garden would come up from the country, come and tend to the garden in London. And, you know, even after my first year of trading, I went to go and see my bank manager and they were sort of like, well, how long do you think you can keep this hobby up for? I remember his name, Alan, at this very day. And I said, Alan, this is not a hobby. This is a lifetime. This is going to be what I'm going to carry on doing. And I sort of proved it, you know, albeit at that time I might have done, I don't know, maybe 8,000 turnover or whatever. It seems minuscule amount of money, but then long, you know, 48 years ago is a lot of money. And I just, you know, because the great thing was, having always been told, you know, I was going to be a failure and that I wouldn't be able to achieve much in my life. And I had control of what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I knew I could do the talk. I knew what I was more or less talking about most of the time. Sometimes I winged it, but you know, in life you have to wing things a few times. And if you don't, you know, it's not so interesting. And having self-confidence, which was by far the greatest medicine that it gave me, the self-confidence. And knowing, you know, it's down to me whether I work 6 days a week or 7 days a week or 5 days a week, and still managing to party. I mean, I always remember the times when I'd just come out of whatever nightclub I'd went to and then would disappear back to the market, Nine Elms Market, or even in the early days of me starting, it was Covent Garden. It was good Covent Garden. I remember it to this very day. But then it went to Nine Elms and, you know, I'd sort of disappear and I'd say, guys, sorry, 2 o'clock in the morning, got to go and buy my plants, disappear off to the market, go and buy my plants. And then disappear home, go and have a shower, get back into the working clothes, get into the van and get on with it.
So those were the energy of youth.
Early days. Energy of youth. But, you know, I still have a huge amount of energy. But the interesting thing was that when my father started his business, you know, back in the 60s, you know, everybody said, you know, decorator, interior designers, they weren't ever really heard of. You know, you had a decorator, you'd go to your decorator, you had a showroom and stuff, and, you know, the interior designers, my father, the David Hicks and the Fowles and John Fowle and all those likes of them, only just started. So it was, it was like interesting that this infancy of this business, you know, that's now cocooned into, you know, so many people out there are all, you know, hugely creative, and, you know, my fellow, you know, landscape designers and everything. The industry has just changed. It's unrecognisable what it was.
Did you have a project that really put you on the map, or was it sort of slowly?
There was nothing. I think it was always difficult because people were very judgmental, and I was doing sort of small London town gardens.
Yeah.
And then when it came to doing something bigger than that, they would say, oh, well, what have you done in the past that's bigger? And I think you look at them and I say, what do you mean, what in the past? I mean, what's that got to do with whether I do something large or small?
Yeah.
And it always takes a bit of time to sort of gain everybody's confidence. But it's sort of like a frustration in life where always people have, you know, questions about whether you can do it or not. But, you know, here I am, as in 48 years later, proving that I can do pretty well everything and traveling the globe and working in some fascinating countries, some of which, you know, I was there in the sort of in Beirut in the reconstruction of the city. And, you know, we did the Phoenicia Hotel, which was a memorable, very well recognized hotel. And we did the whole reconstruction of everything in it. And, you know, other countries, I worked in Canada. I worked on a project there, which went on for 6 years, 4 years in the making, ended up with 37 gardeners.
Was that a hotel?
No, it was a private home.
Wow.
It was in this unbelievable, beautiful. And when I arrived there, I said to the client, I said, normally I'm creating paradise, but this is paradise here.
Yeah.
And I was sort of just tinkering with it. But we did quite a lot of work for 4 years and things moved very fast there. You didn't have time to sort of say, let me go back to the drawing board, let me think about it. You know, you think about putting a new driveway. Well, 2 weeks later, it would be built and you go back and think, just hope that's in the right place.
Wow.
And that was sort of an interesting project. Whereas I met the client at a wedding of this great client of mine who's been a client since I first started business. And I was introduced to her and said, my friend Rosemary said to her, said, meet the world's greatest landscape designer. And I thought, oh, we're not going to deny that one. And then they eventually said to me, you know, if you ever pass in Montreal, drop in. So 2 months later, I sort of picked up the initiative and said, okay, I'm coming. And then I went up to go and see their big home in Quebec, out near Saint-Simeon. And, you know, it was like, oh my God, you know, it's just amazing. I mean, you know, like, land there is and comes in tens of thousands of acres in it. And the bit that we did, it was sort of the immediate area around the house, but it was very interesting, the first beginnings of it, because they asked me to look at something which was quite small. And I looked at it and sent them the report and said, this is what I think you should do. And they came back and said, actually, we don't think it's quite what we're looking for. And I said, well, I'm sorry, but it is what I think it is. I'm not going to change my mind on it. And 2 weeks later, I get a call and say, you're entirely right. And can you come out here now? Because we'd like you to get on with the main part of the project. And I still to this very day think it was actually a tester to see whether I'd actually say, okay, what would you like?
Yeah.
And I think the important thing is be very clear on what you think it should be, but more often than not, what I do with my clients, I always want their commitment, they want their contribution. I mean, as they say, mine is to see the vision, have the ideas, but the other thing is I want the client, which is the most important thing, to take ownership of it.
But when you're designing in a foreign country, I mean, presumably you can't know all the plants and flowers in the whole wide world. So do you concentrate on native flowers and plants and trees in that country?
When I'm working abroad, I do like I do in this office, surround myself with very talented people. As I said, you know, I've had a creative ideas and things, but I mean, when I want to do something like in Canada, for instance,
yeah,
we set up a whole nursery. We set up a team.
Okay.
And we employed people to go and find plants that we wanted to grow.
Right.
And yes, we had to work within the spectrum, yeah, of what would grow, you know, when you have plus 40 degrees and minus 30 degrees, albeit everything is then covered by a blanket of snow. You can't go doing silly things and it all dies. You can have a bit of experiment, or maybe 10% you experiment and say, well, let's try that. But ultimately, you have to listen to the people that know the weather conditions and harsh terrain and everything else. And then you come up with the whole thing. And we grew all the plants. And so it was all grown either on the nursery or on the site there or on a nursery. So everything was pre-grown. We went to the suppliers, we checked with them that they felt what they were going to grow would work. So there's a lot of research and effort that goes into it at the beginning. What I won't do is just go and sort of say, okay, well, ignore them and just do what I want. And it's like Hong Kong, you know, working over there where you've got these incredible, you know, everything just grows so fast, but you know, you really be careful what you plant. It's not going to get suffocated by something else. You know, when we did that one project, it was six houses in Discovery Bay. We planted 900 trees. We went into mainland China to go and find them. So it's every project I've ever done overseas is find the best, you know, best contractor, research it, make sure that they are the best. And then locally, we work with local landscape architects because we don't have a license to go and work in all these other countries. And effectively, what we do is we come up with a concept and then we just do what is called design intent of documentation. And then the local landscape architect will then take that design intent and detail it up and make sure it passes all the requirements, planning and everything else. So in some ways, it's sort of our job is made much easier when we do projects overseas,
yeah,
where somebody else is, as I call it, has to do the grunt work. Yeah. But we're still very much involved in any materials, hard, soft landscaping, all that pre-selection we do.
Is it true that you don't have your own garden?
Well, that's recently changed by the mere fact that my darling mother, who died in early July, and I've moved into her home, and there is a garden there, which forever she was telling me, why didn't you do something with it, darling? You know, this could be your sort of your garden. And I did have a garden before, but, you know, growing up with kids and things like that, it wasn't very football friendly, or it became very football friendly when everything else around it died. So, yes, I mean, the whole home that I've moved into is going to be a major refurbishment and things, which is again what I love doing. I mean, my homes that I've had, I often not like to completely gut them. Yeah, I love that. I mean, if I ever come back ever again, and sort of somebody gave me a second choice, said, what would you do? I'd definitely be an architect of sort, but it would be both the architecture and the design, which, you know, having grown up with it, is always there. And I think, you know, it's been inbred into me, so I'm lucky. I mean, I think the other thing is being able to a very pictorial memory, so I can remember things, I see things, and we're talking about a design, and then I'll remember, do you remember that corner in the garden? And they'll look at me blankly and say, okay, well, let's get the photograph off. I'm talking about this area. So yeah, I mean, having that very pictorial knowledge.
Yeah, no, I can imagine that's incredibly helpful. What drives you, Randall?
Nothing stopped. I mean, I never ever stopped from being challenged. I mean, the challenge, I mean, the greater the challenge, the better. I mean, I love challenges, and, you know, be it large or small, you know, it's just coming up with new creative ideas. No one person is ever going to be ever the same. Their DNA is nothing. The land, the gardens are completely different. Whether you've got, you know, a very flat space, or you've got very undulating landscape, or you know, even got project in Frognall where we ended up with sort of like three or four different levels of gardens. You've got the lower ground floor, and then you've got the upper level, and then you've got the roof, which is all landscape. So it's sort of, I love a challenge. I mean, that will keep me going forever. And also, it's therapeutic, and it's very rare that you actually have business you can run successfully and also have it as your passion. So, you know, when people say, what's your hobby? Well, my gardening. And as I say, I'll do six days a week in gardening. And the seventh day, I will potter about in my garden, but I won't talk anybody about gardening. I think eventually, I need to chill out. I need to sort of think out. But I mean, I don't... People always say you can visit lots of gardens, and I say, actually, no, it's not really something that I need to do. I can do. I mean, my darling wife, Kayo, we went to Japan, and we did two trips to Japan, and I told her I wanted to go and see lots of Japanese gardens, and we did. And I still came back, and I still think I admire their amazement of spaces and the bonsais and just the layout of, you know, we like everything to be sort of straight lines and everything. And over there, it's completely the opposite to what I would do. But, you know, just the raking and how the whole philosophy and all that culture that goes into there, creating these amazing gardens. But yet I've certainly yet to be challenged and be able to do a Japanese garden. I think, you know, for me, no one garden is ever the same. I mean, people say, what's my style? It's a difficult one to answer because I don't think I have a particular style. I mean, I love water. If we're going to have screens, we use Western Red Cedar panels or things. But, you know, the client always has, you know, we want their input and their likes and dislikes. And as I said, the most important thing is actually them taking ownership at the end of the day.
And what fascinated me as well is that when you create a garden, trying to get it to look established and developed, that must be quite a challenge because it's something new, isn't it?
Important thing I always say to anybody is judge your garden what it looks like in winter.
Okay.
Because that is when you can tell whether you have a good structured garden or you have no structure. The most important part of a garden is that you have your backdrop, which hopefully can be something that's evergreen, because whatever you have in the foreground needs that backdrop. It's like a stage. And you then play with that, and whether you end up with, you know, the likes of things like silver birches that give you that contrasting bark, or Betula nigra, which is the dark pink bark. So you need to think about layering too, and what is, you know, your backdrop. It's where the eye will focus. And things like, don't end up buying obviously heavy, cumbersome garden furniture that always stands out there in the bleakest moment of winter, not looking its best. You need to think about plant structure. And that, in my mind, is what's critical when you're designing a garden. What are you left with? It's rather like taking a person and denuding them and saying, okay, go and stand in the garden and look attractive. The structure of plants is critical. And I like, you know, be it the horizontal, verticals, or whatever it is. They need to have that talk to you. They need to have that vision. When you look through it, you could see the three dimension of the garden throughout the whole year, because we can make things look amazing in winter. We have this amazing climate, so everything grows. But it's really where the ornamental grasses and things like that, which, you know, obviously is something that has come very much into fashion, you know, albeit around a long time, but ornamental grasses and things like that, which give structure, that even the bleakest moment in time, you know, whether it's raining or whether it's looking bright sunshine, the light that casts through it is always critical.
And what about your own books?
My books, I've done two. The first book, I think it's sort of part of the reason of writing books is simply because it demonstrates what I've managed to achieve, because I was so frustrated with the lack of people thinking that I had any chance of writing anything. albeit I do have a ghostwriter who works with me, who's extremely patient. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, books are very much sort of the kind of thing you do because it's very great for a client, and it's good for us to be able to demonstrate what we've done in the past. But now we're actually changing. We're now going to do, we do a lot of drone footage of our garden.
Oh, do you?
So we've sort of very much gone to sort of that technology, which I think is where people want to sort of see, you know, it's all very well to show them a picture, but we can actually show them a drone of before, during, and at the end.
Wow.
Which can be put into, you know, literally 3-4 minutes. And that speaks louder than pictures. So that's sort of like, you know, we have to be driven technology, you know, AI and thinking about, you know, we do a lot of our CGIs. So, you know, we're now going to be, you know, like we do our Instagram, you know, we're very much focused on what people, you know, media that they want to look at. So, books are still wonderful to do. And whether I do another book, I don't know. Maybe I'll do my 50 years of my greatest achievements, or maybe I shouldn't, because then people say, why is my garden not in there?
Yes, I can imagine that's quite tricky. And when clients are a bit miffed theirs isn't featured.
Yeah, but I think, you know, doing things more, you know, I mean, obviously drone is a great media, and we photograph, you know, we have a wonderful photographer, Georgie, who does all our photography, and, you know, and then I say, you know, you're going to take photographs of this garden literally 5 times in that season. And the great thing, the project that we've done, which we call River Dance, which is right on the Thames, it literally does have 5 seasonal changes.
Wow.
I mean, even I have to pinch myself and say, you know, we've really done this, we got this right, because it changes all the time. Every time you go there, something's different.
Yeah.
And that's the success of getting the planting palette and all that right.
So tell me a little bit about, how many people do you have in the office now?
In the office at the present moment, we have between 23, 25 people. In total within the company, we have between 50 and 60 people. Apart from obviously the people that manage the project and us run everything, you know, from our project managers to our on-site project guys. So there's, you know, a high level of making sure information and all that. Our designers obviously are critical, because we do the design and then quite a lot of our projects we build.
Yeah.
And then after we build, we then maintain. So it's in our interest to make sure that everything is grown to its best ability. I think Tiago's decided the chair's looking quite tasty. No, I mean, maintenance and that goes hand in hand, because ultimately, at the end of the day, what we design and create, we want to be able to maintain and make sure that, you know, the client has us there looking after it. And so, in big country houses, it's slightly different. What we do is then find them their head gardeners.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, they're very important. I always say, listen, I can create amazing gardens, but if I don't have the right person looking after it afterwards, it can be a complete utter disaster. So we need to be able to make sure that we have the right tools there, not only to build it, which we do a lot of the gardens we build ourselves, but actually the maintenance, the end of the day is critical.
Yeah.
So I only clear to my clients about how many gardens they want to have. And I say to them, oh, we need 2.5 gardeners. They say, well, what does the other half gardener look like? I said, he's the one that comes and cuts the lawns in the summer period.
Quite right. Well, it's absolutely fascinating, Randall. Thank you so much for giving me a little insight into your world. And thank you very, very much for putting up with Diego and being very kind to my mischievous beagle. It's been a real delight to meet you.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. You can hear more House Guest on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment in the audio section, along with our sister podcast, Breakout Culture, with Lord Ed Vasey and Charlotte Metcalf. You can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett.